Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 15th of October 2015, broadcasting from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting the Station of Freedom. We're coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Charles Caleb Colton, we say we owe almost all of our knowledge not to those who agreed, but to those who disagreed. And here from Houston, Texas, is that great unteacher himself, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. G'day, Mike. How are you?
I am marvelous, Paris. I like your quote this morning from Mr. Colton. What a valuable little piece of wisdom that is.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that we owe almost all of our knowledge, if not all, not to those that agree with us, but those who differ. What a powerful statement. It's strange, Varys, that dualism does not fit when it comes to spirituality, but conflict is perfect for living. We need this conflict. We need diversity. We need contradiction. Contradiction is a wonderful thing. When you have a certain thought and there comes a contradiction, it's, well, yeah, but what about that? So, yeah, I love this statement. This is a thriving statement of wisdom for me.
I'll repeat it right now. Charles Caleb Colton said this: "We owe almost all of our knowledge not to those who have agreed, but to those who have disagreed." Good stuff.
How is life treating you? How do you feel, my friend?
Mate, I'm as happy as a dog in a room full of rubber balls, I'm telling you. I just stopped just when you called. I just stopped. I had to take the headphones out from listening to two of your friends dialoguing on forgiveness. Glenn Klein interviewing Chris Harrington on WRJN.com, and it was a buzz. It was so good to hear both of these gospel revolutionaries on a secular radio station discussing something so good.
Oh, fun.
But, mate, we have such a bunch of stuff to get through today. So if you can just, just keep your answers to a yes or a no, that'd be really good, Mike. We'll get through this bunch. First item today is an anti-gay Indiana lawmaker resigns after a sex tape text. I mean, really? Now, this guy was a co-sponsor of the state's controversial religious freedom law. A sexually explicit video starring the representative was sent via a text message from Indiana House Majority Leader's Judd McMillan's phone, and the Indianapolis Star got a hold of it. So what do you make of that, Michael?
Well, you know, there's been one very consistent paradigm since I have begun to learn anything about the difference between Christianity and the gospel, and that's the issue of judgment. I thinketh he protesteth too much. This has been really the pattern. Those who speak the loudest in condemnation of anybody always wind up to be the ones who have this covert, secretive, undercover, deviant lifestyle.
Is there enough adjectives to describe it?
Deviant based on their definition, even. Not deviant based on anybody else's definition, but this, they've already labeled themselves as deviant. And but it is so consistent. That's one thing that we draw from all of these stories is the issue of the power of religion to cause you to be two different people.
Like you've said on other occasions, in order to be a Christian, you've got to be a good liar. Mate, hey, listen, Jeff is poking out some great stuff. What about that video, The Gravity of the Gospel, that he just put out to air?
Well, number one, I felt like I was watching a 1965 science show with the props.
With Cecil B. DeRobinson.
It was really great. He was, showing the flat earth, and he had his little man there. And when I first started watching it, I thought, well, now this is priceless already. But as he got into it, I heard Jeff Robertson say something that brought clarity that has never been brought to this subject ever before by anyone that I know on planet Earth. I remember when I started teaching that man was in the image of God, and that was the problem, that man was separate from God in creation, that there was God and there was the image of God. But only Jeffrey has nailed the statement to its greatest clarity. You know, many detractors who become spiritual in their own right, not scripturally based, but when anybody becomes spiritual in their own right, they always come up with this, well, man was never separated from God anyway. That's just ridiculous. So Jeff starts out his video and says, after he's got his little man on the earth and then he's got his ball and the guy about to fall off the bottom because he didn't want to go around the other side of the earth. So once he got past all of that, he talks about the people having these paradigms that are incorrect, but you go with them thinking they're true when you make your decisions based on false information.
And when that happens, you might vary a degree at this point, but when you get to where you're going, you're like 1,000 miles out, aren't you?
Oh, exactly. That's the thing about extrapolating any inaccurate thought out to its most fatal consequence or benefit, either one. So he comes out with this statement that man was never separated from God. And when I first heard the statement, of course, I had only heard that statement from our detractors. But Jeff went on to explain how that man never was separated from God because the issue is he was never united to God. He was never one with God before the fall or after.
Mm-mm.
And that the only time when God and man became one was at the cross, the new creation. And I thought, now, wait a minute. I'm supposed to come up with this stuff, right? So, oh my gosh, no. And everybody knows I'm being facetious about that. I love learning truth. And Jeff has, on other occasions, has given us just a degree of clarity that just makes it all worth it, you know? And this one is, for me, the crown jewel of the things that I have learned from Jeff over these few years. This one bit of clarity. I was talking with someone, they said, but didn't sin separate us from God? I said, Adam's transgression certainly did something, but it could not have separated us if we weren't joined to God in the first place.
Yeah.
Obviously, God continued his relationship with man, even in the garden. Nothing changed on God's part. The thing that changed was on man's part.
Mm-hmm.
But then later, God developed this adversarial relationship with man, which a lot of people don't like to embrace. But it just makes sense to me that God went through this very human-like experience, because if he was going to become one with man, it behooved him to experience these things, even as it talks about Christ, that it behooved him to take upon himself all the things that man experiences.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. Jeff Robertson, our video guru. If you want to see his videos, you go to either one of two places. Go to, on Facebook, Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution, and they're always up there. All the powercasts, all of the videos, they're always posted in both of the groups, the private group and the open group. The private group, by the way, is just where we post stuff that we just probably wouldn't post somewhere else. The other place, of course, is you go to youtube.com and you look for a channel called Gospel Revolution 1. That is the digit 1, Gospel Revolution and the number 1, and you'll find all of our material up there. And Jeff has, I don't know, he's punched out maybe a couple of hundred videos so far, and honest to goodness, there is no question that you could raise that probably you won't find in one of Jeff's videos. Thanks again, Jeff.
Absolutely.
Mate, this is one of the earlier when I said I'm glad my DNA wasn't dredged from this shallow end of the gene pool, this is one of the things I was talking about. A Tennessee county, it's actually Blount County, a Tennessee county is considering a resolution to beg God, this is a county, to beg God to spare them his coming wrath over same-sex marriage. Now, this is, you know, I can understand when you live in Tennessee, you live maybe not in the heart of tornado country, but I mean, God, if God is really Datchamite. He's probably where he's going to. I mean, if God wants to give the world an enema, it's very possible that here in Tennessee might be the place. So, you know, you don't want to mess with God. On Monday, the Blount County Board of Commissioners will consider a resolution asking God to spare their religion from his coming wrath because the lawless judiciary of the U.S. is forcing them to recognize same-sex marriages. The proposal has been put forth by Commissioner Karen Miller. Commissioner Karen, you're on.
Bonehead of the day.
Well, Bears, before they all pile on you for mispronouncing the name of this county, in Tennessee, it's Blount County.
Oh, Blount County. Oh, yeah. Blount by name and Blount by bloody nature. And Blount by intelligence. My, excuse me.
And isn't it going to be wonderful when, of course, there's a 90% chance that no tragedy is going to happen in Blount County, as there probably hasn't in, you know, the last 100 years. There's probably been a couple of, you know, tragic situations.
And as far as that goes, the people who got wiped out were probably good, God-fearing, church-going Methodists or something.
Even the churches, you know, it's the for some reason, it's the churches and trailer parks. I don't know what it is, but...
yeah,
but, right. But the issue is that the funny thing is, it's going to be like the guy standing on the street corner, you know, whistling and snapping his fingers and patting his feet and nodding his head up and down. And somebody come up to him and asking him, says, "What in the world are you doing?" And he says, "Well, man," he says, I'm doing this to keep the elephants away." And so he continues to nod his head and snap his fingers and whistle and tap his foot. And the man says, "Why, you crazy thing," says, "don't you know there aren't any elephants even on this continent?" He said, "I'm doing a pretty good job then. I'm doing a pretty good job."
Yeah, not anymore. That's funny. Hey, buddy, from Blount County to some Blount talk. It's a pledge drive month.
Boy, it is.
And we want to put our hands in your pockets.
Oh, and grab that dough. Yes, we are. And thank you guys so much. You make our job so much easier, and our support of others. There's so much happening in Kenya and around the world. We are also on the verge of actually initiating a professional to begin our brand new website, which, as we've been told, it will take under 3 months. I think it's actually about 2 months to build this and to completion. Jeffrey has ferreted out website builder who works with a company who builds websites that cost $25,000, which is what we need, is a $25,000 website. But yep. She has agreed to use all of that very same formatting and expertise to build our website for $5,000. So we get a $25,000 website. The girl who builds $25,000 websites is going to build our website, and she's going to do it for $5,000. So part of this pledge drive's goals are raising the funds to get this job done.
Among other things that I do, I run a couple of other websites myself, and one of them has a group on Facebook called Garden Schmuck. And on Garden Schmuck, we were blessed with Moses Garter giving us some pictures of how his pre-market garden is coming along. Mate, that guy's making I wish I could grow cabbages so well.
Have you seen them?
Oh, crazy good.
Those things, I think they're like award-winning cabbages or something.
Mate, take them to any county fair here in the States and you'd win a prize.
And this is the whole field full of these things.
What's he do with them?
Well, he has sold them and bought airtime for the gospel in Kenya from the Catholic radio station and for the Muslim radio station, which we can't. and again, I hesitate to talk about what's happening in Kenya. It is so outside of my realm of experience, my realm of understanding what's going on.
It's almost like another country, isn't it?
It's almost like a whole nother country of everything, not just location. Fantastic things are happening. These folks, we have supported them, and they have been incredibly faithful in supporting the gospel. We've put some effort in there. We went through one failed business, which was no fault of Moses or Liz at all. They had a really good chance at taking over a media school, and it failed, but because of the reputation of a previous owner, it just could not recover. Then Liz had the opportunity to buy a retail store where she sells women's clothing and children's clothing and actually some other items, and they bought it just before Christmas last year with the help of people in the Gospel Revolution. And a bang-up business. This store has expanded, at least from what I can tell from the pictures, at least 2 to 3 times.
Oh, it looks fantastic. And she got it for pennies on the dollar. But, hey, put photos of that in our next newsletter?
Oh, we sure can. Absolutely.
Oh, great.
And now, Moses has become the private owner of a beautiful bus that transports people from Nairobi to Nakuru back and forth, that generates good income for these folks. And in fact, they are now at least 2 or 3 times above the national average of monthly or yearly income. So we have worked hard. The Gospel Revolution has put its funds. I've put my personal funds. Many people in the Gospel Revolution, they have put their personal funds into it. We have gone through a brain tumor that Moses had to have surgery for.
I forgot that, of course. And he just kept playing Mike Williams in the hospital until they got to...
Yeah. And they finally released him from the hospital because they were tired of him spreading the gospel all the time. But actually, they enjoyed it. But we went through malaria. My goodness.
A robbery on the side of the road where he lost his laptop?
A robbery
Don't these guys know when to lie down and just plain die?
Oh, my gosh. And then we went through another robbery where their house was broken into. Liz was severely injured from a fall climbing over a fence and was cut open badly. And then right after the purchase of the bus, Moses got pneumonia. But you know what? They've never chosen to give up, and we didn't give up on them. And now the store is coming up on Christmas season, and they're getting stocked up, ready for a real bang-up year. They've increased clientele, and especially from the Muslim community. And then Moses has got his bus on the road. The headrest for the bus all have gospelrevolution.com on them.
Oh, I love it.
So I thank you guys so much. This is just a tip of the iceberg as to what's happening. My gosh, the news we're getting from around the world is amazing. So I want you to hear from Jeff, the people who have already, just here at the very beginning of this pledge drive, who have committed to extra funds. Now, all of these people give on a regular basis for the most part. But each quarter, they stand up and say, we're going to kick in that little bit of extra that is needed. And it is needed, and we do appreciate it. So, Jeff, tell us the good news.
All right. Thanks, Mike. We have gotten off to a decent start so far. And so let me just tell you who's given thus far. We've got Robert Collier in Longview, Texas. Pastor Ted Winsett in Decatur, Alabama. Pastor Pat Winsett, also in Decatur, Alabama. Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick. Muriel Alexandrowski in North Palm Beach, Florida. Steve and Mary Keller in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Cookie Davy Duck in Castor, Alberta. Dale Van Sickle in Lady Lake, Florida. Walter Wilson in Selma, Alabama. Bernard Rouse in Cadillac, Michigan. Phyllis Schultz in Vernon, British Columbia. Mike and Joyce Camelotis in Mesa, Arizona. Pat Washburn in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Paul Viggers in New Milton, Hampshire, United Kingdom. Lee Dick in Kelowna, British Columbia. Anonymous in Edmonton, Alberta. Alan Davis in Chipley, Florida. Danny Miniskanians in Studio City, California. Patty Holzclaw in Lexington, Kentucky. Billy Thompson in Wachuca City, Arizona. And that's the names so far for our Fall Pledge Drive.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Goodness gracious, these names, most all of them sound familiar. There's a couple, I think, that sound not so familiar. So you guys are fantastic. Thank you so much. And thank you, Jeff. I know that Jeff loves his job. This is a part of his job that he don't love so much.
I don't blame him. I don't blame him.
Oh, how he does it. Oh, my gosh, how he does it. So, guys, Jeff doesn't mind getting a no, but I've talked to him some days when you won't answer your phone, and it's like I had to preach the gospel to him to get him up and going again.
Oh, yeah, it's like listening to Jeremiah or who was that weeping prophet? Yeah.
Woe is me, yeah.
Yep. Now, here's the way that our pledge drives work. We have different levels of donorship. Every single new donor is going to get a pharisectomy certificate stating that their inner Pharisee was removed with surgical precision by the master and teacher himself, Michael Williams. Now, every monthly pledge of between $10 and $50 will be awarded with official sponsor certificates. Every monthly pledge of over $50 a month will be awarded with official producer certificates. These are real producerships, and we will authenticate and endorse these producerships whenever we're asked. You can put producer on your business cards and use its authentic value wherever these real endorsements are accepted, like, say, LinkedIn or resumes and so forth. Every monthly pledge of over $150 a month or $1,800 annually will be awarded with official executive producer certificates. These carry the same weight as a producer certificate. And like I say, use a title in your resume and make sure to get it printed on your business cards as well. Now, Michael, while we're talking about pledge drives, we are looking for all of the old material that we, for whatever reason, weren't able to keep, but the original, some of the original tapes that Michael produced 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I got an email, Mike, from Victor Brennan just this morning, and he said, look, we've collected a bunch of these tapes already up in Canada, and he was suggesting ways that he could get them to us. If you have any old tapes, here is the way we're going to deal with it. If you have any old tapes of Mike Williams Ministries, send them to us, and what you will get in return is digitized copies of those tapes plus all of the other tapes that we have been able to recover. So you're going to get a lot more back than you give, but it's just our way of saying thank you. Now, Michael, like I said earlier, I was listening just before the show, I was listening to Chris Harrington, official sponsor of the Gospel Revolution, Chris Harrington, being interviewed by executive producer of the Gospel Revolution, Glenn Klein, up on WVRN, I think it's called, in
Racine, Wisconsin.
And 5 hours ago, or maybe about 8 hours ago now, we got this email, Morning Beres, from Glenn Klein. Morning Beres, I'm going to interview Michael about the Gospel Revolution, his life, and the book this Friday, October 16 at 11:35 Central Time on my new daily radio talk show, which airs live in the Milwaukee area Monday through Friday from 9 to 2. People can hear it by logging on to wrjn.com. Let's just listen to it right now and see what they're broadcasting right now.
Try to break out, don't play. Let me tell you, man, that aspect of the game is so important. so important to leave in the game. Such a critical and, I think, you know, dynamic, strategic play that if done properly, it affects the game. You get an error. You get a guy that can't make a throw. You don't get the double play, and you live to have another at-bat, the guy, whoever else is coming up to the bat, Glenn, and maybe, you get that clutch hit, that one-out hit, that two-out hit, whatever it is. There's no way that MLB is going to, I feel, change that rule. That's different than at home. At home is an open kind of, sometimes the catchers were literally open to get clocked.
Well, there's nowhere for them to go. Doesn't the second baseman or their shortstop bear some responsibility to get out of the way of that?
Of course. Of course, and there's places for him to go. He can cheat a little bit, but they can't.
Okay, so that was Glenn. I don't know who he's interviewing, someone about baseball. And you should really, if you're not listening to the Gospel Revolution radio station from the Netherlands, have a listen to Glenn Klein. He's got some great stuff and great guests. And this Friday, it's going to be Mike Williams. People can hear it by logging on to wrjn.com. It's going to be a great opportunity to introduce people to the gospel who aren't specifically contemplating the issues we think about every day, but will still benefit immensely by its effect. Hope you're well, Glenn. Hey, Glenn, thanks so much, mate, for that. And you bet, Mike, you're going to be a radio star again.
I'm going back on radio. And, Glenn has asked me to be a guest on his show. And, again, oh, my gosh, we're so excited for Glenn, this move from Florida there to Wisconsin. He's found him a nice little house that he's very happy with.
That's wow.
2 minutes from the radio station.
Golly.
Yeah. And, of course, Glenn is from Wisconsin, so his ability to reconnect with a lot of vitality that he'll be able to bring to this morning show host, I think they call it midday. Not from 9 to 2, Glenn is on the radio, and it's that to me. It's like Glenn was genetically designed to be a radio show host.
I reckon you're right.
So I am just really, really happy for him, and he is giving a lot of attention to his professionalism on the air and off, and we just think it's fantastic. So give Glenn a shout, and if you have an opportunity to thank him for all of his wonderful contributions to the Gospel Revolution, this is one person who at the time when I personally had no place to turn to try to have medium for sharing the gospel, and Glenn Klein stepped up to the plate. We were on the air. He was instructing me and helping me to get a program together. All of this was done live also, which Glenn is very good at, and we pulled it off. And consistent, persistent, and repetitively, we did this program
for 6 years with, I think, two days that you missed out or postponed it or something.
Yeah, very, very few interruptions into it at all. And so this was the resurgence and the reintroduction and the reconnection of many people who were supportive of the gospel, but no connection with anyone else. So, yes, do tune in, and I'm sure that this interview is going to be a lot of fun.
Michael, this week we read a story. A former pastor, let me see, where has he come from? Florissant, Missouri. Ralph Drew Sawyer, 30, confessed to stealing almost $22,000 from the savings account of the Baptist church where he was formerly a pastor. Why? To keep his affair with his girlfriend a secret. This guy had a mistress, and he claims that she tried to blackmail him, so he made 35 withdrawals from the Lindsay Lane Missionary Baptist Church savings account at a Bank of America and at an ATM in the lobby of a hotel in downtown St. Louis. Is it St. Louis or St. Louis?
St. Louis.
Why would a good Christian pastor want to hide the fact that he's got a mistress? I don't get that.
Well, I don't either. I mean, isn't the Christian life all about being honest and truthful and forthright? And I mean, my goodness, But to avow that you are keeping that, you must be a liar. You cannot do anything but lie or repeatedly visit the altar. That's for sure. And in public and in front of everybody.
Now, do you remember a week or two ago we had mail from Steve Davis?
I do.
About God's provision, you know, where God guides, he provides.
Yep.
Well, a couple of days ago, he sent me this, actually about a week ago he sent me this. He says, to clarify, when I say selfish ambition relies on yourself, I am not referring to separation from God. I'm referring to the flesh or worldly thinking, law and works. He said that almost as a postscript, which he actually put at the top of the page. He says, I want to add one more thing to this, but Mike said something that I can't shake off that just doesn't sit right with. Now, listen, mate, you're going to have to stop this upsetting our people. So, gospel revolutionary Steve Davis says this. In answering my earlier question, Mike said something that I can't shake off that doesn't sit right with me. He said he didn't see how you could ever be free while believing that where God guides, God provides, because we are one with God. And if you take that to its ultimate conclusion, that would require thinking we are still separate from God. Problem with that is, if it is up to us to provide for ourselves, and that is all our responsibility, sounds like freedom. Sounds like we are free to make our own choices. But if we take that to its ultimate conclusion, there are far too many details in life to be concerned about. And if you follow that to its ultimate conclusion, then everything is up to you in this world, and I don't see how it can ever be possible for you to be free. Therefore, it seems to me the person who trusts and rests in God is far better off. Jesus and the Father are one, but while he was in the flesh, he depended upon the Father for everything. And I don't recall him ever once being concerned about figuring out how to make ends meet so that he could fund his ministry. Instead, he handed the purse to a thief. That's how much he knew the Father was in absolute total control. If being one with Christ while he was in the flesh did not take away the Father's ability, or maybe he means if being one with God while he was in the flesh did not take away the Father's ability to be in total control while still being one with a human, then why would God lose his control by becoming one with us? However, I hope you're keeping track of this, Mike, because there's several...
Therefores and howevers and therefores and howevers.
So. Plenty of questions here, buddy. However, that is not the proof.
I'm trying to track.
Good. Stay with me now and watch the step. However, that is not the proof, because I'm not trying to point to a what would Jesus do type of thing. So after the cross, perhaps the reason we are called to be his bride was to indicate in that culture that we are to be dependent on the husband, not just for spiritual things like righteousness, but for everything. Sure, the two became one spirit. One of the fruits of the spirit is peace. If peace, a fruit of the spirit, was just a wartime word, meaning that war is over between God spiritually and us, then that fruit only applies to right standing with God. But if peace means complete, nothing missing, I think I'm hearing a bit of Gloria Copeland seep through there, Steve. If peace means complete, nothing missing, then it means we realize we are totally secure, nothing missing or broken in our lives, because we are not broken, meaning we are not separate pieces, spirit, soul, and body. Rather, just like God, our own spirit, soul, and body are one. However, if one has to plan their life in the physical world apart from the spirit and take full responsibility for all the details, is that always self-control? Sure, it can be when we are doing what we want, but if somebody is reacting to circumstances and is fearful that they cannot make ends meet, then isn't that a lack of self-control? Rather than self-control, aren't they more like relying on selfish ambition? Because self-control is a gift from God, and selfish ambition relies on yourself. And selfish ambition is not a fruit of the Spirit. I know it's revolutionary. No, it's not revolutionary at all, mate. We're going to have to take 6 weeks to get through this lot.
Oh.
But he says, using Jeff's great phrase, have a revolutionary week, Steve.
Yeah. Yes, I thought that was cute, yeah. Well, one thing Steve is doing is thinking, and we always appreciate that. As Jeff placed in his revolutionary video that he just did, is the one of the greatest faults is going on assumptions of things being true that just aren't. It's interesting that Steve brought up the issue of at the end of this about part of the fruit of the Spirit, because there's not the fruit of this and the fruit of that. This is one fruit. The fruit of the Spirit is all of these things. Not these are different fruits of the Spirit.
Hang on, are you telling me that because I get angry and impatient at times and not awfully well balanced, are you telling me I got none of them?
You need to be more fruity.
Yeah, right. Go there, Michael.
So, but self-control. And here was the thing that when I came across the issue of self-control, why would a God who wants control give you self-control? That's the fruit of the Spirit. The Spirit is not God control. It's self-control.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't the fruit of the Spirit say, and part of the fruit of the Spirit is, I am in control of you? Just the opposite is said, that self-control is a part of the fruit of the Spirit. Now, all of these things, they sound good. Great. They preach well. They just don't work. Who lives their life that way? Where God guides, God provides. Does that mean you do nothing?
I think that this concept has been encouraged by stories such as Hudson Taylor, who founded China Inland Mission, and other people who, in extraordinary courage, honestly,
oh, exactly,
went out as missionaries with nothing more than the clothes on their back and came back with stories of how it worked. I don't think all of these stories are made up.
No, they're not made up, but neither is the guy who was looking for the prostitute in the middle of the night and couldn't find one and suddenly did find one. Is that God providing where God's guiding? You see, these stories are not exclusive to spiritual pursuit. These stories are applicable to selfish pursuit, as Steve pointed out, that there are selfish pursuits. You can have selfish pursuit, and things just work out. There is an issue of just forward motion that humans do. North Korea, I believe, was just tested a new nuclear long-range missile.
Did you say long-range?
A long-range missile. I don't know what you heard.
I heard a Chinese accent coming through or something.
No, you didn't.
I did. You said a wrong range. Oh, it doesn't matter.
A long-range missile.
Oh, wrong range.
And it was successful. Does that mean that was God's provision? We get tunnel vision on these things, and we start making these declarative statements based on spiritual stories. These things work even when the stories aren't spiritual.
Now, do I hear you saying you can't judge something by the results?
You can't determine whether it was God's will or not. So first off, we have to back up and deal with God's will, where God guides. So what we're relying on is the will of God. Well, according to Paul's teaching, the will of God has been completed in Christ Jesus. If a missionary goes to China to preach Mormonism, do you believe that that's God providing? That's God guiding? If they go to preach Buddhism, is that God providing? Because it all happens equally with all of these spiritual organizations. They all claim provision from God. They all send out people to impossible situations. We have missionaries that go out, and you've had missionaries that go out and get killed. Did God fail to provide?
Mm.
We have missionaries that starved to death. Did God fail to provide, or did they just miss the will of God? And God sat back with his hands up, sorry, I wasn't guiding, so I ain't going to be providing. See, it sounds good in the concept of the most narrow interpretation. But if you open your mind to say this doesn't only happen to people espousing to the name of Jesus, this happens to people espousing to the name of Satan.
Now, what about Jesus? Steve raises a point about Jesus in his lifetime, knowing that his father provided for him, and the inference is that we should be the same way. He wasn't concerned about figuring out how to make ends meet. so that he could fund his ministry.
Exactly. And he didn't figure out, he didn't go to work either. I mean, he, at some point he gave up his carpentry. He didn't. So is that what we're advocating? Jesus made the statement, give no thought for tomorrow. Now, I challenge anybody to do that explicitly.
Now, well, I'm just thinking, give unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, give unto God that which is God's. And he pulls a coin out of a fish's mouth.
Exactly.
Now, I'd like to hear more stories from our people about their fishing expeditions and how many diamond rings they pulled out of a fish, because I don't know anyone who has done what Jesus did in that respect. And what Steve is asking here, though, is it seems that the person who is trusting and resting in God is better off. Could I suggest that they're better off in as much as they don't worry so much, but I'm not sure that they're better off other than that. And how many people decided to trust and rest in God who were not better off?
Well, I've gone through this transition, Barris, and so have you. Now, here is the odd little coinkydink about this. The fact is, I don't ever say God is not involved in daily life. God is involved in all life, but he's not. But you see, when you get into dualism, God's there to help you when you're doing good. God ain't there to help you when you're doing bad. When you're making a mistake, God can't provide. When you're doing it right, God provides. That just isn't true. God's with me whether I'm in church or whether I'm in a porno shop. It doesn't mean I cancel out both of them by saying I don't go to either one. So.
Well, what he said is, so after the cross, perhaps the reason we are called to be his bride was to indicate in that culture that we are to be dependent on the husband, not just for spiritual things like righteousness, but for everything. Sure, the two became one spirit.
Well, if the two became one, that means one is not depending on the other for anything they don't have. They are one. That doesn't create a dependency. That creates a coexistence of equality. Now ask women if that worked for them, depending on the husband for everything. Well, now if that's worked for some women, that's great. But you can't take that and make that a blanket statement and say that that works. The fact is, we are free, and freedom does not allow for somebody to be more dependent on somebody else than they are on others, and for others to rule over others in any way. Now, God is in me and in Barris and in Steve. So God is a part of everything I do. When I fold the towels, when I go to the gym, if I go out on a date, if I meet somebody in the grocery store, if I'm on the PowerCast or I'm watching Gunsmoke, I can't take God out of anything because he's in all, of all, through all. I can't take him out of anything, and I'm not attempting to. But the fact of it is, freedom requires that I am the one who exercises my will in this life, because God exercised his will in spiritual life, and all things have been settled in that realm.
Now, in the group in which I was brought up, Michael, we were taught this idea of trusting and resting in God. In fact, C.T. Studd and Hudson Taylor that I mentioned, and people like George Mueller, who pretty well started the orphanage movement in the UK. And there are some extraordinary stories that come out of people like George Mueller. You can't deny them. But I never found that that worked for me. And I did always suspect that the concept of trusting and resting in God, as far as his providing would go, I always suspected that that was a little bit convenient for people who didn't want to get off their blessed assurances and make things happen for themselves. And when people say to me, why, if God is real, if God is love, why do children die of starvation? I say, why do you blame God? You and I could change that in an instant. We could change that inside a week, but we don't want to. So who's to blame, really?
Well, yes, and I think your point for me is very well taken, Barris, because could it be that this illusion of sitting back and waiting for God to guide and provide is what's paralyzed us to the plight of the human race around us. Why can't we respond to it? Why can't we feel? Why can't we be spiritual enough or human enough, either one, to be responsive to this without having to get a direction from God so that he can provide? Is that to say all when provision is made that it all comes from God? Is Donald Trump's billions that he says he has, who has never asked God for forgiveness one day in his life, is that God's provision for Donald Trump? Are we going to have to sit back and decide which is selfish ambition and which is God by virtue of the righteousness of the decision or the religion that is out there that is, Kim Jong-un, is God guiding him? He's certainly provided for above anybody in his entire nation. So these things, and I know I sound frustrated because I am, because I know the question comes from the greatest sincerity. But now, Barris, I've gone through this transition. I never consider, does God want me to do this or that or anything? It doesn't come to my brain. And yet, I'm not thrown into chaos. In fact, my life has been taken out of chaos into a state where if there's anything called the fruit of the Spirit, I can go down through them. It's much more present in my life now that I am not buying into, whether it would be a fact on Steve's part that where God guides, God provides, or the illusion, either one. I don't buy into it. And yet, for myself, I have found so much peace. I don't worry about tomorrow. It's really strange that once that I took this spiritual element out of daily living, that's when I began to acquire all of these things that Jesus talked about. Don't worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow will take care of itself. That's when these things begin to fall into place, is when, not when I spiritualize them, but when I de-spiritualize them. Now, somebody else can have another experience. But the one thing you can't take out of this, Barris, is that this experience is exclusive to people who believe in the right, much believe in God or the right God, or believe in the right Savior or the right religion, or practice the right religion anywhere on the face of the earth. Because this statement can be applicable to anybody who believes or doesn't believe anything. Steve, we thank you so much for the question. I love getting something gets me stirred up. So
I can see that, mate. You need. Have you been eating red meat again?
I need to see if. Check my bottles of meds and see which ones I've taken and not taken.
Yeah, I reckon. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that follow-up. And
really
please
do.
And please follow it up again. Just a suggestion. I'm not saying that you shouldn't contact us if you've got any more than one question, but because a lot of what you included in there was not actually extra questions as much as it was explanation. About your question, but thank you very much, Michael. This week I got an email from Frank Viola. Frank is one of the guys that authored the book Pagan Christianity. If you haven't read it, buy the thing. I don't care what it costs you, just get it. You will never look at Christianity the same, I absolutely promise you. He says, hey, Frank Viola here. And he ran through a few things, and he had on there a list of five things I wish older Christians had told me. Number one, I wish they'd told me that you'll turn your head and you'll be 50 years old. So live in the present and savor every moment. You can't rewind the clock of your life. Number two, life won't get easier. So learn to accept trials and disappointments and suffering and incalculable loss. Three, Christians will break your heart. Four, a great deal of what you are certain about now you'll question later in life. Five, the commitments you made in your 20s will be severely tested in your early 30s. Now, Frank is a man who stayed has stayed in Christianity and is trying to change Christianity from the inside out. But I just thought that these five things were really interesting, particularly number three, Christians will break your heart.
Well, exactly. And doesn't this contrast with the letter from Steve? This man is saying, why didn't you tell me that everything that is presumed by the question that we got from Steve ain't true? That's basically what he's saying here, that these things, that these absolutes that you teach, they aren't true. They don't work.
Life won't get easier, so learn to accept trials, disappointment, suffering, and incalculable loss. He's saying, listen, everything that happens to non-Christians is going to happen to you.
Exactly.
And he's not saying, and Jesus is going to make it all okay for you.
Yeah.
He's just, yeah. We got a letter this week from gospel revolutionary Paul Vigors in the UK. Good old Paul said this.
He's always there?
He's always there, mate. Like the Holy Spirit. It's scary, actually. Hi, would it be possible to clarify the meanings of the four words heart, soul, spirit, and mind? When these words are used in relation to human lives, I find them confusing. Thanks. Paul Vigors in the UK. Now, Steve, we love you to bits, but you see how... Oh, I'm not going to say that. What do you reckon, buddy?
Well, welcome to the club, Paul. You know, we use these terms to try to bring clarity to what we're saying at the moment. I agree with you, Paul. Goodness gracious. We can declare what these three mean, but the fact of it is, I don't think there really is a hard line, a hard dividing line between the three to express them. Now, you'll hear me do it because we all have to try to bring some comparative explanations to these things. But don't ever take any of these things as that the definitions of them are complete and crystal clear, because they just aren't. When you go through the Greek and the Hebrew words of these terms, They vary greatly, the best that I understand. Now, Barris, you could probably give us a little bit more insight in this. Now, I do teach on body, soul, and spirit to try to bring some clarity to the understanding of life. But at the same time, these are not words that you can really give hardcore definition as opposed to the other, because they're all connected, so connected and interconnected that sometimes these lines that we teach on just aren't as absolute as we may declare.
In the Greek, these words are all they're different words.
Yeah.
You have heart, which is cardia. From which we get cardio from in medicine. You have the soul, which is psuche. You have the spirit, which is pneuma, which from which we get pneumatic. It means the breath of us. And the mind is nous, N-O-U-S, or nous. And these are all different words. They're often used interchangeably. Firstly, we have a doctrine called the doctrine of the Trinity. Now, this was a doctrine which was rather forced on the church, and it was forced on the church in various manners. But suffice to say, there's only one verse in the Bible that can be lent on with any great deal of reliance for the Trinity, and that verse appears to have been added at a later date. In other words, it was translated, or the book of John in which it appears was translated through the theology of those who wanted to maintain that theology. Now, I'm not saying the Trinity is not real. Please hear me here. I'm just saying that in the same way that we have called God a Trinity, we've called ourselves a Trinity, soul, spirit, and body. Not sure that that actually walks on all fours as much as it's an invention to help us to tear apart. See, in this body, I am a holistic being. I am just a holistic being. But in order to make things more understandable, I resort to terms like the soul, which I call the mind, will, and emotions, the body, which is obvious, and the spirit. Now, we know they're separate And yet you can't know they're separate. For example, you can remove part of my body and I still will not lose my mind. You can remove part of my brain and I won't lose my mind. But I can have a whole brain totally functioning and yet lose my mind. I might, it might be heartbreak or. If you want to have fun at a party, pick out a psychologist and ask him, where does the brain stop and the mind start? You'll have fun doing that, particularly give him a couple of glasses of wine and you won't get away from him for a couple of hours, and yet he'll say nothing because he can't. There is no one knows. So all I'd say in response to that question, Mike, is I am one with God.
So do you think that's accurate? My response to him was fair?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, because, totally.
You know, there's things that we don't know for sure. There's things we know for sure scripturally. But scripturally, to know these terms for sure, that they are definitive and separate from the other terms, they just overlap too much. And we are there's so much, as you say, we're a holistic person. You know, for technical purposes, I go to the doctor and they look at my heart as opposed to any other part of my body. And they'll tell me what my heart's doing, what my heart's not doing, and what needs to be done for my heart. But can you look at my heart as separate from my body? You can't. So we can discuss these things separately to give verbal recognition that there's something different about them, and therefore give us a greater ability to explain maybe what a text is saying. But to say that we know for sure the defined lines between these two, and that there are defined lines. If there were, I'd be the first to tell you. But I'm with you, Paul. I love it when we're able to say, goodness gracious, this is an area we just can't nail down completely. We can talk about it. We can use it. That does not forbid us from using these terms to explain some things. But to say that we know them so clearly that you need to have no confusion about them at all, I think the person that says that is very confused.
Oh, and they'll lie about other stuff, too.
They lie about other stuff, too.
Hey, mate, guess who we heard from this week? We heard from Gospel Revolutionary Danny Rogers.
Yay.
Now, I'm going to read you the whole thing. I got this in two parts from Danny.
Yeah.
And, Jeff, don't call me and say you can't say the person's name. He called me the other week when we had somebody's email about schizophrenia. And I'd put the name out. And Jeff told me, no, sorry, you can't do that. Well, I'm going to read this out, Jeffrey, just so that you you'll hear it. Danny says, "Dear Barris, this is Danny again. I have a very special request, kind of a huge favor to ask. I have a 25-year-old daughter who has been diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. Almost all of my kids have now been introduced to the marvelous grace that Mike has been teaching. Jessica, as we speak, has been hospitalized now for the last 4 months. And during this stay in the hospital, she has blessed me with my fourth grandchild. The baby's name is Danica, a beautiful 3-pound, 6-ounce baby girl. Oh, congratulations, Jessica, and congratulations, Danny.
Absolutely.
Jessica understands that the basis of your teaching is grace and that the whole world was redeemed through Christ's sacrifice. Jessica also knows that Mike was in hospital for mental illness. Jessica's question is this. How did Mike cope with his lengthy stays in the hospital, and how was he able to remain true to himself while he was ill? Do you think Mike could respond to my little girl's question? I know that Mike's response would make a huge impact on Jessica and her recovery. Your friend Danny." I said to him, "Do you want me to hide your/Jessica's name or let it go to air?" And he said, "Will you and Mike do it on the show?" And then he said, "Put our names on air. This will be so special for Jessica." Did you hear that, Jeffrey? "I can't thank you and Mike enough. Thank you, Barris." And that was the end of that conversation. And then in the second message I got was this. "Mike and Barris, your show is great because the message of grace is presented so clearly. Yesterday we had our Thanksgiving Day dinner and Jessica came home on a 5-hour pass from the hospital to enjoy it with us. She has listened to many of your shows and also the talks that Mike has given on grace. After dinner, while I was driving her back to the hospital, she announced to me that her baby's middle name would be Grace. Your show really works, Barris. It really, truly works. Please let Mike know. It really is opening the hearts of people, and I have the granddaughter to prove it. Forever and ever, your friend, Danny.
Oh, Barris. Well, this is about real stuff here, and I want to respond to this as straightforwardly and from my heart, my mind and my soul, all together. And I'll let somebody else figure out which one's coming from where. I think this is a great place to remind people that the power of the gospel is not measured by what it adds to your life. It's measured by what it takes away. It is not measured by what it changes in your life. It really is measured by how you deal with the life that you are dealt. We have been so obsessed with changing people's lives. Jessica's diagnosis that she has dealt with may have absolutely nothing to do with spirituality whatsoever. But I'll guarantee you that Jessica was under Christian doctrine she would be dealing with, and the people trying to help her would be dealing with way more than what Jessica is dealing with now. Look at this. In the middle of the suffering, in the middle of the suffering that this young girl is going through. And now, I have been through mental and emotional suffering, and I know Barris has too. Our hearts, mind and soul, all go out to these beautiful people. And this is no implication as to where they are spiritually. These are true disorders. They really are. Now, there are some disorders that are brought on strictly by external influence. Religion can cause these disorders, for sure, but not always is religion the culprit. Religion will compound it, but there's people who could believe all the right things and still go through what Jessica is going through.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica, the number one thing I want to tell you, sweetheart, is what you're going through is no implication as to whether or not you are believing the right thing or not. What you believe, if it helps your heart, and let me tell you, when you announce to your father that your beautiful daughter's middle name is going to be Grace, I think you were turning to that which has been helping you. I think you wanted to memorialize in your own flesh and blood that which has been an encouragement to you and that which has brought relief in the middle of your suffering. Sweetheart, don't ever let anybody tell you that there's something you've done wrong that has brought this upon you. Don't ever, ever, ever think that there is some moral failure on your part that has brought this upon you. These things can, it's just like the other stories that we were talking about earlier. You can point to all kinds of stories if you look at life through a very narrow prism as to one person went out and did something bad and became mentally ill. But you see, there's people that go out and do wonderful things and suffer from mental illness also, Jessica. So, number one, what we want you to know, Jessica, is that you are hearing from people who have suffered as you have. These things don't have to be lifelong, but they sure can seem lifelong when you're in the middle of them. We are extending all of our love to you from everyone in the Gospel Revolution. There is no one I know that has not been touched in some form by these terrible, difficult situations in life, especially when they are around your age.
Michael, Jessica's question included, how did Mike cope with his lengthy stays in the hospital, and how was he able to remain true to himself while he was ill?
Oh, I wasn't. I would like to tell you that I did, and I was. I lost it. I lost it completely. And shock therapy, you know, the whole nine yards. I went on medication. I went off medication. everything that you could possibly think of. I didn't stay true to anything. I was surviving, Barris. And when you are in this situation, survival is the mode you have to go into and to accept each moment. I remember when I was working with Glenn Klein in this, and he tells this story, and it just amazes me every time. He told me that the thing that helped him most, there was a couple of things, but I told him that, and I don't remember telling him this, but he said that I told him, Glenn, the one thing I can tell you is that the way things are right now will change. Now, they may change for the worse, or they may change for the better, but they will change. And he said there was something about dissolving the illusion that things were going to get better that actually made dealing with the moment easier, because he wasn't looking to another disappointment. He wasn't, but and man, I'm telling you, I went through this, Barris, when I was dealing with the kidney thing, and there was only one time that I went into a mental and emotional state that was negative in dealing with that. I had convinced myself that my next tests were going to be good. I know it. Something tell me. You know, I just got all spiritual about it. I just know my tests are going to be good. Well, I went in and those tests were worse. And what I had been dealing with quite easily, mentally and emotionally, suddenly I was knocked to the floor. I could barely get myself out of the doctor's office and in the car and back home. And when I got home, I measured what had happened to me. And Glenn's words came back to me. And I realized I had set myself up for this disappointment. And that's the last time I've done that. And the moment is the moment. Jessica, I'm going to go out on a limb here and tell you the same thing, sweetie. I'm going to tell you that what you're going through now, this will change. It may get better and it may get worse, but life is going to continue. And as we keep walking out of this, the only thing I can do is tell you, in my situation, I experienced none of the mental and emotional suffering that I went through earlier in my life. I don't go through it at all, Barris. I can tell you, there's not a morning that I don't wake up that I think how thankful I am for that. I can't tell you how it ended. I can tell you that the gospel came into my life. I can tell you the effect that that had, but I can't tell you for sure what caused this. I can point to a lot of other people's lives that this has happened for. I can point to you a lot of people's lives who are still very much suffering. Congratulations, sweetheart, on your new little girl. I know that that has inspired you by the virtue of the fact of you naming her Grace. So you and your dad continue on in the understanding of God's absolute approval of you, God's absolute acceptance. God finds no fault, no blemish in you whatsoever, sweetheart. We are 100% on your side and here for you at any time that you would want. We are here for you.
There you have it, family. It would have been ever so easy. In fact, while Mike was speaking, I wanted to interrupt him and say, hey, listen, say this or try that, because we do. He and I produce this show together. We edit this show together, and he allows me to have some input to what he says. Not nearly as much as I'd like, but a little bit. And it would have been ever so easy. What I was going to say to Mike was, how about you say, listen, I came through this, and so shall you, Jessica, but I'm just right now I'm a little bit shredded because of the raw transparency that Mike's answer offered. Mike is not going to tell you, he's not going to blow smoke up your dress. He's not going to tell you it's all unicorns and roses. He'll tell you what's happened, but the one thing we can say is keep yourself immersed in the gospel.
Exactly.
Just keep yourself immersed in the gospel. We're not going to, it would have been so easy to say something nicer than what Mike said, but it's important to us. Yeah. And we realize when we're speaking to people like this, we're speaking into people's lives. It doesn't matter how you want to cut and dice it. We are speaking into people's lives, and people can make some huge decisions or no decisions based on what we say. But before we are true to anybody else, we have to be true to ourselves.
Bears, I think the one reason that we take this route is because we have learned that the heart, the mind, and the soul all function at their optimum on truth. And whatever the truth is, spiritual, physical, financial, whatever it is, you have the equipment to function on that which is truth. When your soul and your heart and your mind hears something that's not true, it knows it's not true. So there's no need in going there. But as Glenn expressed to me, it gave his insides something to deal with because he knew he had heard the truth about his situation. And so his soul could deal with that. The reason we tell the truth is because we believe in the truth. We believe that the truth will make us free.
Here is a story that came through this week, Mike, from OCRregister.com. The Catholic Church, surprise, surprise, is transferring property worth some millions of dollars. And they're saying that it's essentially because they're safeguarding the church's property. But church officials say the move aligns the laws of God's church with the laws of man. But critics denounce it as an attempt to insulate the dioceses, and we're talking about the Catholic Diocese of Orange, California. And but this is no, I mean, this is happening in dioceses all around the U.S., in fact, all around the world, where they are insulating their money from any court claims for payouts because of pedophilia. Can you say hypocrite?
I can say it. For sure. Goodness gracious. Well, you know, and like you say, Paris, it would be a tragedy with the wealth of these stories that are out there that if we didn't cover them.
Yeah. Well, look, a lot of these stories we just bring you because in passing. But you need to understand this, that we have made our stand and we've left. Christianity has had 2,000 years to prove its claims and to change the world for the better.
Yep.
And we don't see it. So we just point this out. We're not trying to be negative. We just think that the whole thing's a failure. Mate, this morning, or it was last night, I heard from Dylan Thomas. He's a gospel revolutionary. They're on our Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution page. And he's got a new book out, buddy. He calls himself, what is it, The Mystic? I think The Mystic. And his new book is called Jesus, Junkies, and Abuse. It's a book about elephants in the religious room. Those damaging, you got to like that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Those damaging relational aspects of faith that are hastily excused or embarrassingly brushed under the sacred carpet. Dylan Morrison tackles both the addictive aspects of God-fearing belief and the hidden spectrum of spiritual abuse that often lurk beneath the surface of otherwise respectable faith groups. Part 1, Religious Junkies. Part 2, Spiritual Abuse. Part 3, A View from Beyond. And I encourage you to look into that. This is available on Amazon, Jesus, Junkies and Abuse, for $5.45 for a Kindle version, and for the paperback, $11. Dylan is an Irishman that lives now, I think, in Lincoln, UK, and an altogether all-round nice guy. But he does have a handle on a few things that some of us just need to hear.
Wonderful. Well, it's good to have another Dylan Thomas around. We had Dylan Thomas, the poet from Scotland, that was around a few decades ago. And he wrote the poem, Do Not Go Gently Into That Good Night. Wonderful poem. So now we've got another Dylan Thomas.
There you go. A national treasure. So, family, as we come towards the end of this show, let me remind you that religion wants to upsize your expectations, outsource your thinking, and repurpose your existence. But God's eternal plan was just to enjoy the heck out of you and all of your uniqueness. And so it is, family, that we must leave you. Don't forget to visit www.onemikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. In it, Mike lays out the gospel in simple, straightforward language and weaves it with stories from his own personal experience, which led him to the place of ultimate ease where he now lives. Hardcover, $27, paperback, $15, Kindle edition, a whole huge $3.03, sugar reduced, salt free, and seats a family of four in complete comfort. Go get yours now. You know, a dollar a week is nothing, but here at the Gospel Revolution, it can make all the difference for somebody just like you who are starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. We run a value-for-value model here. If you feel that you've received real value from this podcast, then I am asking you to seriously consider donating a dollar a week or a dollar a day. Just call our office on area code 321-220-4373 and speak to young Jeffrey Robertson about how you might go about helping the message spread. Or, of course, you can go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer? Dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. And thank you for those people today who did exactly that. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Danny. And thank you, everyone, for your questions, because questions are
the lifeblood of the Gospel Revolution.
You can find us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/Gospel Revolution. And now it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night from Michael Williams here in Houston, Texas. Thank you guys so much. Jeff has given us a great report. I'm sure we'll have more good reports for you next week. Keep in the forefront of your thinking that during this pledge drive, we really want to finance this $25,000 website that Jeff has diligently researched and got a professional web builder to do this for us. It can be completed by wintertime if we can raise the $5,000. They only want $2,500 down to start it and $2,500 when it's finished. So we can do that. We can do that. Thank you so very much for all that you do to help us do what we do and do it with great joy and ease.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended, that don't mean you, right? So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
It always gets better.